North Florida Congressman Ron DeSantis formally files to run for Florida governor. It's been pretty cold out there, but did the mayor overreact when he shut down the city? And did you get your tickets for Sunday's big game as the Jaguars make it to the playoffs? Good Friday morning and Happy New Year. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. You can also subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and through our app. Just ahead, it's our first ever Friday Roundtable of 2018. You can get on the line now with your thoughts on the top stories of the week at 549-2937. Then later in the hour, only in Florida, and a look ahead to the top local trends for the new year from our media roundtable. All of that ahead, but first, it is Friday. Time for our weekly breakdown of the biggest headlines from the last week as we welcome David Bauerlein, reporter for the Florida Times Union. Hey, David.
Good morning.
Tim Gibbons is here, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal.
Good to be here.
WJCT business analyst John Burr, also with us.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. And regular show contributor Fred Matthews.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to have you guys here. And it's been a busy news week to kick off 2018. We're talking this hour about everything from the big Jaguars playoff game Sunday, a look ahead to top local and state trends for the year. Also, how are you getting along out there in our deep freeze? We'll talk about how the city reacted to this cold snap. All of that and more ahead this morning. But our top story right now, we learned here in the newsroom just a little while ago that Palm Coast Congressman Ron DeSantis, a Tea Party favorite and a favorite of President Trump, is filing paperwork today to officially enter the Florida governor's race. Now, the 39-year-old DeSantis is a former prosecutor, Iraq war veteran, and both a Yale and Harvard law graduate. He's also married to local TV personality Casey DeSantis. DeSantis is a very conservative Republican who represents the 6th District of Florida, covering all of Volusia and Flagler counties, plus parts of St. John's and Lake counties. Got an endorsement tweet from the president just around Christmas time, which massively boosted his fundraising and endorsements. He's going to enter a crowded field on the Republican side, already led by the current frontrunner, State Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam. But for the state's Republican primary voters anyway, this tweet from Trump has changed the game. We'll begin the hour with a look at the Florida governor's race as DeSantis throws his hat in the ring. What are your thoughts? The number to join the show, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And you can weigh in on Facebook as well. And Fred Matthews, let's begin with you. Certainly for the primary portion of this race, DeSantis has completely upset the apple cart. In Florida, more than 80% of Florida Republican primary voters support President Trump. So he's in good stead with that voting bloc. As we move into the general election, though, should DeSantis win the nomination, it could be a very different picture. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that certainly the tweet, the left-handed tweet, gave him a pretty good bump. There's no question about it. He has the name recognition at this stage of the game. Good name recognition, good resume. In many cases, a stronger resume than Governor Scott did, and and he doesn't have that. But you know, despite even in Governor Scott's case, despite the problem with the hospital companies that he had going into the race, he had enough money to take him all the way through across the finish line twice. So I think it's a good thing for DeSantis and obviously a good thing for the Republican Party to hold on to the top seat in Tallahassee.
DeSantis is getting enormous fundraising now after this boost from the president on Twitter from people like Las Vegas casino magnate Sheldon Adelson, for example. David Bauerlein, these are not typical fundraising sources for a state race here in Florida.
Yeah, it's very interesting that Ron DeSantis would be, in a sense, a Northeast Florida guy if he were elected governor. This is a part of the state that's wanted to have somebody in the governor's mansion for decades and decades. And yet he doesn't really feel to me like a Northeast Florida politician. I don't really sense that he's really tied closely to issues in this part of the state. He does have a tremendous amount of support that's coming in from really large donors who are big in national races, who have decided to really weigh in on this Florida election. So he's going to have a really well-funded campaign. And it is interesting that that's happening.
And
the
that's
way
because
it
is. He's picked this basket of issues that resonate well with some of these deep-pocketed donors, like, for example, Sheldon Adelson, big supporter of Israel. There are certain issues driving this.
It's interesting. The old line of all politics is local. Still true, obviously, but there's a change in politics where we have basically national figure, people running almost a national campaign for a state office. So you end up with the same people who would support you if you were running for president coming into the race, because these are the issues they care about. It's not really a Northeast Florida or even a Florida sort of question. It's more of this broader, who do you align yourself with philosophically?
And this is where the Republican Party is really so far ahead of the Democrats in terms of trying to control state government across the country. It's worked. It's not just the redistricting and the gerrymandering that people have talked about. It's really tactical fundraising over the years that have boosted them in, you know, governor's races and state legislatures across the country.
It's 549-2937. Give us a call. It's our first ever media roundtable of 2018. Now, DeSantis's announcement is not good news for Adam Putnam. The Agriculture Commissioner or House Speaker Richard Corcoran, both looking at the Florida governor's race, they're going to have trouble getting to the right of him in the primary. On the other hand, for some Democrats, this news is being seen as a positive. Most widely known Democrat in the Florida primary field, Gwen Graham, probably would prefer to run against DeSantis as opposed to, say, Adam Putnam. And then also, when you talk about the district DeSantis represents down in Palm Coast, this opens up a seat for both Republican and Democratic would-be members of Congress. There are a number of Republican candidates already going for the nomination in that race. On the Democratic side, former UN Ambassador Nancy Soderberg has been running for a while. So this is good news, and she's a local person too, so this is good news for her. Makes the seat a little more competitive. And so that's a seat that CD6. Is that a seat that can flip, or is that a seat that's still likely to go Republican with this new scrum of candidates now trying to get that seat?
If they can get to the heart of the voters in that district, I think Ms. Soderberg is certainly a good candidate, well qualified on certainly national issues, with a good resume, has run before. But the question is, can they get to the hearts and minds of the conservative voters in that district? And that's the thing that the Democratic Party, especially on the local level, has been having trouble with from county to county. They haven't been able to move that ball to get, it's not so much getting a different candidate, it's being able to get their message to the voters, to get them to listen to you. And I don't know if they're going to be able to do it even with Ms. Soderberg.
I would agree with you, Fred. The Democratic Party locally is, it may be an overstatement to say it's in a shambles, but it's not far from it. They're not very well organized.
She's a candidate, though, and let me just say, there are a number of candidates around the country that are getting national support from races that the National Democratic Party sees as competitive, particularly as Donald Trump's polling numbers continue to slide. Now, as a minute ago, I mentioned among Republican primary voters in Florida, his approval rating is at 80% plus. Statewide, though, it's a very different picture. Your thoughts, guys?
But the big question, I think, after Alabama is what is the lesson that the Democratic Party takes from it? Is it that you can win a race when there's, you know, scandal and a whole bunch of other things, or can you win a race by having a really well-qualified candidate who's able to connect, as Fred said, able to connect with voters? You know, Jones didn't back away from being liberal, but was able to connect with Alabama voters in a way that another candidate might not have.
And in particular, African American voters in Alabama.
Right. So if you can have a candidate who can win, you can go to an Alabama where a Democrat has never won, you know, not never, but, you know, in since Reconstruction, I guess, and actually, you know, have someone win that seat. And that's the question, I think, for Florida of does the Democratic Party run candidates in these races that in the past they would have said they couldn't win?
And I think they are doing that. I think Florida will be a test of the blue wave. It's a classic purple state. It's usually tended to trend more Republican in off years. is this blue wave that some people say is going to happen nationally. If that happens, it'll crash in Florida as well.
And then will that crash into the governor's mansion? What do you think about this race now? Say it's Ron DeSantis versus, let's just say for the sake of argument, it's Gwen Graham. How do you see that race?
DeSantis. And I'm just telling you, part of it is the discussion you had yesterday here. Part of it is the discussion you had yesterday. The other part of it is, what impact, if any, will the Democrats, for instance, be able to turn out the influx of Puerto Rican citizens mm-hmm. that they have to Florida? Will they be able to get them registered? Will they convince them to go to the polls? Will they convince them to do anything? Will they use that? Will they be able to turn? I mean, Democrats are still the larger party in the state, but they can't turn out their voters. And who leads the party out of Tallahassee? Nobody knows who that is. They just got a new executive director, for crying out loud. I mean, so the Republicans are already organized, focused, and as you say, this is a national agenda for them. If it is for the Democrats, but I like Gwen Graham. I think she's a nice lady. But remember the last honed banker that ran for governor, you know, in a great, she was well qualified by anybody's, yes. But we can't even remember her name now.
Right. My point, Fred, is that, you know, the
Alex Sink.
Alex Sink.
That's right. It was Alex Sink.
Yeah, it's Alex.
You gotta look it up.
She was great.
No, I didn't look it up.
But that's my point. Fred, that's my point, you know.
But I look a lot of things up.
Is that, you know, that party strength and organization is so vital to get out the vote. And the Republicans are just much further ahead in Florida and in many states than the Democrats are.
So you've got that strength on one side. On the other side, you've got, I think as David said, this mounting rage and anger among Democrats and independents against the Trump White House. Will that translate?
Yeah, I think it could. I mean, you have a lot of, and all the polls show, a very energized Democratic voters. They are more intense about going to the polls and voting than Republicans are.
And in off-year elections, that's what it comes down to.
Absolutely. And that
which
has
side
not
is
always
more fired up to turn out?
That has not always been the case in off-year elections in Florida. And so is this a different dynamic here going into this year? I think it is. I mean, when Alex Sink got beaten, she was in the high 40s. It was a competitive race, but they didn't turn out. The vote didn't turn out in the same proportion as it did in the presidential election when Obama won two Florida elections statewide. So is the fact that you would have a candidate for governor on the Republican side who is a Trump loyalist, does that cause people who otherwise would not go to the polls to go there to basically sound off on the national politics the way they arguably have done in other states? You would think the same thing would happen in Florida.
And I think, Melissa, when you start now talking about the primary and the general, that becomes the interesting thing.
So exactly. The Trump tweet, very different electorates.
Right. Trump tweet can be great for DeSantis in the primary, but, you know, the ads write themselves and the general. And, you know, as David said, there is a very motivated anti-Trump Democratic base that, you know, having a guy he very much supports, that might motivate them more.
I'm getting emails from, I'm assuming this gentleman's part of that group.
Oh.
Ira emails the show, Stolen Valor. DeSantis was a JAG lawyer attached to a unit in theater. He did not maneuver, find, fix, or kill the enemy. His military occupation specialty is classified combat service support, a rear echelon job. Please do not use the term combat veteran. I'll look that up and research that, but thank you for that email. Mm-hmm. And the number to join the show as we talk about the top stories of the week is 549-2937. Now, of course, we're talking about who's vying to replace Governor Rick Scott, who is term limited. Scott reached across the aisle and joined the gentleman he's likely to be running against for a U.S. Senate seat, Senator Bill Nelson. Both Scott and Nelson yesterday voiced opposition to the Trump administration's proposal to open areas off Florida's coast to oil drilling. Nelson, in a statement, said the plan is an assault on Florida's economy, national security, the will of the public, and the environment. This proposal defies all common sense, and I will do everything I can to defeat it. And so you see rare bipartisan agreement in Florida on most issues, but on this issue, you definitely see bipartisan accord. Most leaders in this state are adamantly opposed to offshore drilling. John Burr.
And the simple reason is because offshore drilling, if it goes bad, will kill tourism, and tourism is the number one business in Florida. So this doesn't have a partisan side to it.
I mean,
this is all about jobs and, you know, the state's economy and keeping Florida an attractive, beautiful place. And, you know, everybody agrees with that part.
It's interesting that with the ties that the governor has to the president, that his pleas fell on deaf ears. I always find it interesting looking at political calculations where you have people tout their relationships and the ties they have, and, you know, the mayor is close to D.C. and the governor is close to D.C. and then Trump administration turns around and goes, we're leaving Florida on the list. It's interesting to me.
Well, I mean, this is about business, and this is administration that is about business and about deregulating as much as you can deregulate. That's why the pipeline was opened up and been touted and going forward.
The Keystone Pipeline.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how many times it leaks. I mean, that's just, it happens in business, right? I mean, it leaks and fix it and we go on.
That's leaking on Native American reservations. I mean, nobody cares about that. But this is beaches in Florida.
A lot of people protesting cared about it. I get your joke.
I'm not cynical.
David Bauerline.
No, I grew up in Texas, and, you know, our beaches were nothing compared to what the beaches you see in the panhandle on the Gulf of Mexico. And what John says is absolutely right. I mean, it only takes one spill, and the proof is in the pudding. You can see other parts of the Gulf Coast where, you know, people would go there and there'd be tar balls or little oil balls on the beach. That would destroy the tourism industry, and they can't afford that for that to happen. I just think there's and that's a national economic generator too. So,
well, how about this? The announcement came from Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. Rick Scott has requested to meet with Secretary Zinke to have Florida removed from the administration's plan, a proposal for a new 5-year offshore drilling plan to try to drive up U.S. oil production by opening up more federal areas to companies seeking to drill.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. And you're going to see that from California also. Mm-hmm. Same issues in play there. I don't understand why offshore drilling is even a priority. I thought, you know, I was remembering 5-6 years ago, people saying that shale gas and shale oil is going to give us enough energy for the next, you know, 150 years or whatever it is. You know, what's this all about anyway?
Well, it's all about money. It's what it's all about. It's about if you're in the oil industry, you want to continue to diversify your ways to make money. If we're moving, if you have a planet and a lot of folks are moving toward wind energy and are moving toward other solar energy, then you're still in the oil business. So you still got to find ways to drill to make that, to keep your product viable until you can convert your company.
Yeah, but there are easier and cheaper ways to get oil and gas than offshore drilling.
I think it's also just one of those like statement of faith sort of things. That if you're somebody who believes that oil companies should be able to drill wherever they want, now you're in the White House. Well,
that's certainly a base play,
right?
If,
exactly.
If you're President Trump and you're under increasing fire over multiple investigations, a new unflattering book that just came out called "Fire and Fury" by journalist Michael Wolff, one way to rally your base is to come out with an announcement like this.
Right, and I think John's point is correct that there's no necessary economic benefit from it, but it fires up of, you know, look, we're doing the right thing in opening offshore drilling. If you think that's the right thing, this gets you excited.
Yeah, they're doing it with the Alaskan, in Alaska, with the wildlife refuge where they're going to drill there. That's been a debate that's been going on forever, and they're saying, well, now we're going to start drilling there. It's basically the idea that, well, nothing's sacred in terms of where the drilling can happen. And, you know, the idea, I guess, is that we've reached a point where these accidents are not going to happen, which just seems ridiculous.
The Deepwater Horizon folks would beg to differ.
We ran on drill, baby, drill.
Okay, and it's 549-2937. I thought that was McCain Palin.
We ran on it.
Who's we?
Well, I think it carried over.
It carried over. 549-2937 is we ask for your calls on the top stories of the week. Our first media roundtable of 2018. Okay, I think this might get the phones lighted up because it was a rare sight in Florida this week. Snow. Yes, we've been suffering through an unusual cold snap as a powerful winter storm slams the entire eastern seaboard this week. Snow actually fell in Tallahassee and other parts of North Florida for the first time in decades, basically freaking everybody out. Mayor Curry even shut down City Hall Wednesday as a precaution. Was that an overreaction or simply a prudent move because people down here can't drive on icy roads? Oh. It's 549-2937. We want to know how you're all getting along out there. Give us a call with your weather stories. You laughed out loud when I said that. Everybody freaked out.
I mean, Jacksonville got a cold day. The City Hall got a cold day, not a snow day, not a sleet day. They got a cold day.
I'm going to make 2 points here. So one, I've lived in Florida, I don't know, 14 years or something. Grew up in Pennsylvania, and I remember first coming here and having schools shut down for a cold day and mocking that.
Me too.
And then once I had a kid and realizing you're standing at a bus stop, Pennsylvania, you have the winter coat, you have the mittens, you have the hat. You don't hear some kid's going to freeze to death, and apparently that's a bad thing.
yes, that would not be a good thing.
That said, holy crap, Jacksonville. It was cold and rainy.
People lost their darn minds. What? I mean, I'm with you, Tim. Like, I looked outside. I'm like, okay, it looks a little nasty out. Then I opened up social media. Everything's closed.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Well, it's because the world is run by lawyers now and insurance companies. And whenever there's a threat of anything that might go wrong, you know, people start shutting things down.
Except they better pick up my garbage.
That's right.
So the one.
You don't want Fred on the phone to you.
The one bit I will say is I get the idea if you're worried about the bridges because people.
Yeah, I could see that.
People freak out over the Matthews Bridge in like perfectly dry, clear circumstances.
Right. Sure.
I could easily see an accident happening on that bridge when it's rainy and cold just because somebody freaks out and, I don't know, decides to pull in oncoming traffic or something.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
God. I'd say as someone who grew up in the Sun Belt, I'll put in a plug for maybe it was not such a bad call.
Thank you.
I mean, I was reading through some of the coverage we did.
You don't want to underestimate people's goofiness on the roads.
Yeah, you know, when they had a snowstorm in 1989 where they had about 2 inches of snow. And so I was reading through some of the coverage we did of the 25th anniversary of that. And Tommy Azuri, who was the mayor at the time, had a great quote. He said, someone called him up and said, where's the salt? And Tommy said, enjoy the scenery.
It's on the beach.
To Tim's point, there's a level of preparation you have in northern states to these type of winter snowstorms and blizzards. And hey, I saw some of the video out of Charleston. I think they had snow. It was just an incredible sight to see some of these southern cities that you wouldn't have expected.
And how about this new phrase we're learning about, what meteorologists call the bomb cyclone?
I used to play bass in Bomb Cyclone.
Exactly. I heard that was a good band. Yeah.
But in all seriousness, I think it was probably the best call because, it was... We've just come through a hurricane. We've just come through all of these issues. Many places have simply not recovered. And many areas around our own area simply not recovered from this. And every night throughout the day, these last few days, I mean, somebody's gotten burned out. Somebody's gotten their heater is overdone. A candle was lit in a place over near, I think, near Springfield, and the house was burned down. And, of course, when you saw what was happening on I-95, if you're working, truckers, once you left Florida heading north up 95, forget it. You're just going to have to pull over. And just waited out because the snow was just too overwhelming. So I think in many cases, the snow day was probably a good call because it did keep people off the streets. We had no shootings. Was there any shootings? There
were any people were too cold to go outside and shoot each other.
There were no shootings. There wasn't anything going
on. Everybody was inside. You
know, it's really hard to shoot wearing gloves.
Well, you know, you need money.
We shouldn't joke about such things.
It doesn't slow them down in Chicago.
But again, that was David's point.
They're used to
it. That was David's point that they're prepared. They have the shooting gloves.
It's 549-2937. If you're just tuning in, it's our first Friday Media Roundtable of 2018. For the full hour today... We want your calls as we talk about the biggest headlines from the week. Let's go now to Ricky on the north side. Hi, Ricky. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, my question is, what's your take on the Trump and the candidate he supported here in Florida for governor wanting to take the whole country down the drain by destroying the environment and trying to build a wall that's going to cost so much money and is not going to work at all to fix the immigration problem?
Well, who are? Question. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Who would get your vote for Florida Governor Ricky?
Pardon? Well, the vote is Nelson. Bill Nelson is the one that should.
Well, he's running for Senate. Ownership. He's running to be reelected to the Senate. So who would you vote for governor?
I'm sorry. No, the Republican governor that Trump is supporting, that's my question. Why does he support the Trump administration bringing the whole country down by his destruction of the environment and trying to build a wall, that's not going to be of any value at all?
Okay.
That's my question.
Yeah, thanks for that, Ricky. Okay. And how about the fact that Governor Scott, who's leaving his post and is looking to probably run against Bill Nelson for this Senate, has suddenly gotten religion on these environmental issues? Have you guys been noticing that? All of a sudden, Scott is very concerned about the environment as he kind of tacks to the middle.
Yeah, and some of the conservation groups have called it sort of election year conservatism in terms of moving forward with some of the initiatives he's had. Well, I mean, I think he realizes that that's something that's important to the Florida electorate on a general level.
Yeah.
And so he's done some things there to try and brush up on some bona fides so that he can maybe say that, at least inoculate himself against some of those criticisms that might come forward in the general election.
Like the caller just now.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. He's been, it seems like every week, and this is a different subject, every week he's doing some outreach group to Puerto Ricans who have moved here to Florida. That's a way for him to try and tamp down any kind of a reaction from Puerto Ricans who are in Florida and a big and growing voter bloc that might take it out on whoever is aligned with Trump because of dissatisfaction over the pace of recovery in Puerto Rico.
He's doing
some things to try and sort of rearguard actions to keep himself from being so vulnerable on some of those issues.
I think that's one of the most interesting things to watch in the off-year election is what do the Puerto Rican citizens who, the citizens
where do
who
they go
here
and
from
will
Puerto
they
Rico,
make a difference on the margins?
Right.
100,000 new voters.
Right. And presumably motivated to vote at least on a national level because of the national government's response to the crisis in Puerto Rico,
which is ongoing, by the way.
It is.
All right, 549-2937. Rod on the south side. Hey, Rod, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I was calling in, Melissa, love your show, and I heard your panel were mentioning about the weather, and one of your panelists said something about the trash. Now, that right there, I didn't quite understand it because the mayor shut down everything that had something to do with the city. But mind you, most of your landfills are ran by the city. Everything was shut down, but you still had to pick up your trash with heavy driving on these icy roads. I didn't quite understand that.
Yeah, thanks for that call, Rod.
Well, yeah, I think that was still going on. And it probably would not have gone on if we were picking up trash the old way, where you have three guys on the truck and one driver. But now, you just got one driver, and you got that automatic thing that just picks it up. He keeps driving. He never has to get out of the truck. And after a long holiday, you did have a lot of trash, and it would have built up. I think we did, after Christmas, we did move it down a day, I think, anyway. But that was one of the services that stayed up on Tuesday.
Here's an email from Stephanie. The real risk to children during the cold is another day stuck at home with exhausted parents ready for the holiday break to end. Schools canceled, most museums and stores were closed. In desperation, I tried the playground at Chick-fil-A, and even that wasn't open till lunch. Please, Jacksonville, think of the moms. Oh, Stephanie, I know exactly how you felt.
Yeah, at least going up north, you could go outside sledding, or you can play in the snow. You can't really play in the rain.
That's right.
Rain balls and rain men.
We used to make snow forts and stay out all day making, playing in the snow.
Oh, you Buckeyes.
Oh, and it's our Friday roundtable as we talk about the top stories of the week. If you're just tuning in, we have all four of these guys for the full hour, which is really exciting. In a moment, we're going to talk about the Jaguars playoff game Sunday and the big rally later today. And also look at the top local trends for 2018. But right now, let's take a few more of your calls at 549-2937. Joe is in Arlington. Hi, Joe. Happy Friday.
Hey, good morning, TGIF, to you too.
Listen, I joined the program a little bit late, and I know you're talking about Rick Scott's possible run for the governor. But listen, I'm a teacher, and a few years ago when I came back to start my classes, we found out that Governor Scott was charging us for our pension, which was just news to me. I'm just dumb and happy over the summertime. But also, I think he went without a lieutenant governor for 7 to 9 months, which, I think that's against the law. And I know that the pension, he had to go 2 or 3 times. He finally won his decision in the Supreme Court. But I would be a thumbs down to Governor Scott, just because he seems to be the type of person who just does whatever he wants to do. I'll listen to my response off the phone, if you don't mind, because I'd like to hear what you had to say.
Okay. Thanks for that, Joe.
Well, I mean, that's going to be the question. I mean, we have, like it or not, we have a strong governor that has been able to hold this seat and keep it locked down through all the winds and turmoils that go back all the way to his first lieutenant governor, who was unceremoniously taken out of the seat from our Jacksonville area. And he weathered that storm despite some anger from those who did it. And
now I'm drawing a blank on a name. Who was that?
Well, Denise Carroll.
Governor Carroll. Yeah, Lieutenant Governor Carroll. That's right, Jennifer Carroll.
And despite, just a side note to that, I think we'll all remember, it was all about the casinos.
It's the Allied
all
Veterans.
Allied Veterans of the World scandal. Yeah.
And all of the turmoil.
Everyone seems to, and
nobody got convicted. The lawyer almost went to jail, but he got it all turned over.
He got it all turned overturned.
All turned over.
Kelly Mathis.
All of it turned over, and here we are almost eight years later, and guess what? The casinos are back. And all of that was for nothing, and he didn't take any heat for it or nothing for doing that.
He took some, but as you said, he survived.
He survived all of that.
He survived all of that because he promised to add, 800,000 jobs to the state, and lo and behold, and I don't think he can really take credit, although he did, we got 800,000 jobs.
Wait, a politician? No.
The economy improved. Yeah. He got the jobs. He looked great, and he sailed into a second term.
Yeah. You can't. It's kind of, despite whether or not how you may personally feel about it, the facts don't bear out that it's been a disastrous term under him, two terms under him in the state of Florida. We haven't come out that badly with it. But as to whether he can make a good case for being going against Bill Nelson, that's going to be the thing.
The next 6 months, so much can change in politics. It will be a fascinating year to watch unfold. As I think it was you that said, one of you guys said, this will be certainly a nationalized election in many respects.
I think, too, what the caller was referring to, I think, was something that happened in his first term where, for the first time, teachers had to pay out of their paychecks mm-hmm. some contribution towards their pension. And that didn't stop him from getting reelected to a second term as governor. And I think John's exactly right. He had the economy to thank for putting some wind behind his back in terms of running for reelection. How long are people's memories? I mean, is this caller, there's a lot of people there that didn't like some of the decisions that Scott made as governor.
And keep in mind, too, he only won both times. This state is always on a knife's edge. And right. I mean, it can toss either way. He only won by a point or two. And so this state is perpetually in play. We'll have to see how it goes.
I was going to say he won both times when he had an approval rating that was mm-hmm. under 50%.
Yeah. Right.
Which is remarkable that a governor can win re-election and win 50% of the vote plus when your approval rate is under 50. So there's something about Republicans being able to figure out how to work that electorate and get the vote out.
It all comes down to that. Right? It all comes down to the organization and the on the ground and actually getting voters to the polls. That it almost doesn't matter if less than 50% of the electorate like you, as long as the right number of those people end up voting.
Okay. Right. And let's talk about something else quickly. The number to join the show is 549-2937. Lots of excitement all around the town this week as the Jaguars prepare to play their first home playoff game in 18 years on Woo-hoo. Sunday. Yeah, the Jaguars facing off against the Buffalo Bills. Later on today at 5 p.m., Mayor Curry and Shad Khan are expected to lead a pregame rally at Daly's Place right next to the stadium. As Shad Khan tells the Florida Times Union that he expects Sunday's 1 p.m. matchup to feature an incredible atmosphere. Give us a call with your thoughts on the Jaguars' playoff chances at 549-2937. How many of you guys are going to the game?
I am.
You're going to be there?
I'll be there.
Be watching it.
You'll be watching it from the comfort of the Tim Gibbons mansion. Yeah. The Tim Gibbons abode.
Sitting on the couch.
Sitting on the couch. All right, so this is exciting for Jacksonville. And apparently Mayor Curry is going to be on the NFL Network this morning talking about this too.
Yeah, I've heard. He's obviously a huge football fan. Anybody who follows his Twitter feed knows that. And so he's kind of been a head cheerleader, I guess, or somebody who's really done a lot to try and rev up interest in the Jaguars. And obviously he's traveled, I think, to a couple of their away games. So it should be a fun, exciting game. And you know, the idea that everyone's sort of at the same time, everybody in the whole city is tuned into the same event. Right. Happening in real time.
Right.
That does create a great
that
vibe.
That is exciting.
In a city.
Yeah. Sure.
And as exciting as it is now, if the Jaguars win and go on to Pittsburgh and win there and go on, you know, and those things happened in 96 and 99 season, you know, the excitement's just going to ramp up.
Well, I believe frequent guest A.G. Gankowski, I believe in his most recent predictions for the year, did predict a Jag Super Bowl win. So, you know.
hey, you never know. You never know.
Put your money down now.
Kool-Aid time.
It's just a great thing for the city and certainly for the long-suffering Jags fans who they're week in and week out trying to get through this, and it's just a good thing. Whether it's a one and done, it's just great. It also bids well, and we always end up coming back to this, John. We always end up coming back to the economic impact that this has for us. Now that Daly's Place is finished, I think the mayor just had an event there to announce all this stuff the other day. Now that Daly's Place is finished, and we've got a fairly good concept of what we want to do on that Bay Street corridor heading down there. Soon City Hall, the old City Hall and courthouse will be gone, and then eventually that thing will be done.
Another 10 years of that.
Yeah, no, you know, but it's going to happen. we've got an entertainment corridor there that could work for us.
And let's talk about that, too. As this playoff excitement spreads around town, David Bauerlein, I know you've been covering this, and Tim, you as well, Shad Khan's plans to develop the shipyards and the whole sports complex.
Right. That's the latest wrinkle, which is to bring kind of an entertainment district, which a lot of other cities have done, and Jacksonville's not yet done that. But the idea would be you'd have a place where you could go indoors before the game, and you'd have great restaurants, bars, hangouts. Maybe some people don't get tickets to the next playoff game. Let's say the Jaguars are in the Super Bowl in 2 years. And maybe then, you know, everybody goes to the entertainment district and they're inside this big hall watching it on a big screen TV. It would be the idea is a lot of other cities have done a great job of bringing a lot of these facilities right up close to the stadium. And I think that's something that the Jaguars seem to be really moving towards, as well as the city.
We had Mark Lamping at one of our events a couple weeks ago, and I was interviewing him there on stage. And he basically said that, you know, the main question is what happens with those ramps coming off the Hart Bridge. City very much wants, the team and the city very much want to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. It's an expensive project. It's very unclear what's going
to
happen.
Didn't the city try to get a grant and failed to get one?
They did.
To take those down?
I believe city council actually has some money to actually continue studying taking them down. The question is the state would have to be involved.
That's right.
But the interesting thing that Lamping said was that they have a plan to move forward whether or not those ramps come down. Obviously, it's a bigger deal, a more expansive thing if the ramps do come down, but they are committed to moving ahead with something. I know we're talking later about what 2018 is going to bring, but I think that is one of the main things people are very much anxious about is the shipyards have been tried to have something done with them multiple times. Nothing's ever taken. There seems to be more of a will and more of an enthusiasm, so it will be interesting to see if that actually comes to fruition.
And a lot of that enthusiasm is because Shad Khan himself is pushing this.
Right.
You know, the city has a very strong partner there, and you've got some energy building that's really potentially quite transformative for the whole area.
I keep coming back to this famous quote Shad Khan said, that a homeless guy in Detroit has more mojo than millionaires or business leaders in Jacksonville, and that he couldn't understand why more stuff wasn't happening. Yeah, he said that a few years ago.
Yes.
In the last year or so, though, things finally do seem to be kind of happening. There are a number of projects that are coming off planning stage now. Speaking of which, let's quickly touch on a business story. Project Volts, an unnamed company described only as an international manufacturer of solar panels, is looking to set up headquarters in Jacksonville. They're known only as Project Volt, and they promise to create 800 jobs at two facilities in the city.
What's fascinating about that is the time frame. A lot of times you look at these projects and it's, you know, over the next 5 years, over the next 10 years. This is 400 jobs. According to looking at the project agreement with the city this morning, according to the summary of that, it's 400 jobs by the end of 2018 and another 400 in 2019 at this manufacturing facility / headquarters.
And what's interesting there also is for the long term, people in the solar power business are figuring out that Florida is a potentially huge market, and that's why they're going to build
it's
them here.
It's about time.
Although you do have some controversy about that in Jacksonville with, you know, JEA's changes to net metering and such, but that's a whole long other conversation.
That's a long conversation. We just have a couple minutes left before the break, but in effect, solar advocates are accusing JEA of making solar non-competitive.
Right, they're changing how a rooftop solar user gets paid, or how much they get paid for the energy they send back to the grid. The end result is people have to get batteries, and the return on investment takes much longer.
Well, we had to know that was going to happen when they were pushing for the vote in the last term. I mean, we had to know that JEA was not going to stand back and lose this revenue opportunity once they lost the opportunity to control it. So they've come up with another way to do it. They're going to essentially offer that, as they're doing now, that solar opportunity to customers who can bank that. I think that's what happens. You buy the solar time and you can bank that with JEA for some other purpose down the line. And that effectively kind of squeezes out the private solar companies from going directly to the customers, because they can no longer, they aren't getting the kind of tax benefit that they would have gotten before.
To get back to Volt for a second, the interesting things that I found looking at that summary, though, is that it's also, they've committed to using Jaxport for, I think the term was, a substantial amount of importing and exporting. Jaxport has seen a growing volume of stuff from China. Mm-hmm. Most of the stuff would come from China. But ramping that up, having more containerized stuff from Asia is a clear win for the port. It'll be interesting to see what type of spinoffs can occur if we actually could get more of an industry rather than just, you know, a factory. So we have Saft making batteries here, but we don't have a battery industry. If we started having more solar-related things, that could be a thing.
Absolutely.
David.
Well, I was going to say, picking up what Tim was saying, yeah, you have Saft, which is in the whole area of batteries, renewable energy in that sense. You have potentially a large solar manufacturing operation. Maybe if there's some research and development, that would be something, too, they would add to sort of, wow, okay, it seems to be a growing cluster of businesses.
Rob tweets the show, imagine the economic impact if the Jags actually did make it to the Super Bowl. We can dream, right?
I don't know. How much avocados can you buy?
In a moment, a look at Only in Florida and the top trends our panel sees for 2018. That's right after this.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Join us Sunday nights for fresh programming beginning at 9 with On the Beam with me, David Luckin, as we spotlight music from the 30s and 40s.
I'm on the beam. Time's flying by.
Followed by Taste Test with host Damian Lamar, presenting Urban Radio After Dark.
There is a place that I'm saving.
On the Beam and Taste Test, Sunday nights at 9, only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world, your music.
Oh, so you don't know this. On the next Fresh Air, we remember trombonist Roswell Rudd, who died last month at age 82. We'll listen back to our 2002 interview. Also, we'll feature our interview with Jordan Peele, whose film Get Out is nominated for Golden Globes for Best Comedy Film and Best Comedy Actor. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Science is big. Think the power of the Big Bang or the distance from here to Pluto. But science can be small, a tiny virus in your bloodstream. I'm Ira Flatow. Join me each week on Science Friday as we sort through the latest news in science and cut science down to size. That's on Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. Get the latest news, event updates, and see what happens behind the scenes. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Welcome back. Well, in the few minutes that we have left in our inaugural 2018 Friday Media Roundtable, our esteemed panel is going to do a lightning round and give their thoughts on the top local trends. On the First Coast here for 2018, let's begin with John Burr.
Oh, my goodness. Top local trend is the continued growth and expansion of the local economy, the state economy, the national economy, the international economy. We are in a point of history now where economic growth is going on in North America, in Asia, in Europe, and that's just, we're a part of that, and it's going to continue to benefit everybody in Northeast Florida.
Tim Gibbons.
I think this could be the year that the anticipation and excitement about downtown actually comes to some sort of fruition. I mean, you have the Barnett Bank building and Laura Street Trio have been talked about for years, and the local person and the partner he's working with have finally gotten that actually they're doing work in there. You walk by and there's people working. That's, amazing to see. Big question is going to be what happens with the landing. You talk about momentum, crashing and breaking, and I can see that if the landing situation isn't dealt with, you're going to end up with shipyards gets done, energy is drawn that way, and the big question is what's the role of the landing? So I think that has to be answered. But a lot of interesting things happening downtown. This could be the year they come to fruition.
David Bauerlein.
Voter referendums. Obviously, there's going to be a constitutional amendment election coming up in November. So there'll be a lot of interesting issues for people to weigh in on a lot of different things that could have local and state impact. Here in Jacksonville, obviously, we just came off a year or so ago of the big voter referendum on the pension half-cent sales tax. The big issue coming up this year is going to be JEA. Do you sell it, privatize it? Who knows how that's going to be decided, but one scenario could be voter referendum. Who ultimately decides on the sale of JEA, but the people who actually own it. So stay tuned at the ballot box. There could be some big issues that could have direct democracy in action.
All right. And Fred Matthews.
Another good year for the mayor. We have a strong mayor, former government, and he has been able to maneuver through some very, very tough issues, the Confederate monument issues, one he doesn't have to do anything about. It's in the hands of the city council. The issue with JEA, he doesn't really have to do anything about it because the city council's got to deal with it first, and it may even have to go to the public. All he has to do is keep the trains running on time, make sure the snow plows work.
Cold rain plows.
Cold rain plows. Call cold days when necessary, keeps everybody happy, and become
with some 5 o'clock shadow.
That's a trend. Now we'll see how that beard thing works for him in the coming weeks. Let's see if he's bold enough to actually do the beard.
We are the bold city.
Okay, well we'll see that. But it's going to be a good year for the mayor.
Maybe he keeps it going until the Jags win the Super Bowl. Maybe that's one of those.
Boy, would be a long time.
You never know, guys. You never know. All right. Finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state this week. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now. Only in Florida. And only in Florida do guys named Thor shoot at a tow truck driver when their car is being hauled away. Yes, most of us are turning on the heat in this cold weather, but one Melbourne man was packing heat. 46-year-old Thor Yerebek, that's his name, was arrested Monday when he shot at a tow driver carrying away his repossessed GMC truck. The driver was pulling away when Thor whipped out his .45 caliber and popped off some shots. The driver called 911. The best part of this is the 911 call. Is the driver said, yes, Thor, like the superhero, like the Viking god. That's his name. Police then brought down the hammer on Thor. Yes, I am milking this horrible pun. With charges of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and others, he's held in the Brevard County Jail.
The big twist is that the tow truck driver was Stan Lee, making a cameo.
And finally, only in Florida do frozen iguanas fall out of the trees. Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
Because they're so cold. It's raining iguanas here in our crazy state after one of the strongest winter storms in modern history. Green iguanas are cold-blooded, so they become immobile when the temperature gets too low. Under 40 degrees, they just stop moving. They like to sit in trees, and they're basically frozen in place there. But then eventually, they fall out. If you see a fallen iguana, wildlife officials say try to move it into a patch of sun.
Try to move it.
Yeah, go ahead.
But be careful.
Try to move it.
It's probably not dead.
Call somebody.
Oh, really?
No, they're not dead, just frozen.
Puck it with a stick. Puck it with a stick.
Oh, wow.
Try to move it.
Yeah. One of my favorite only in Florida's, as we kick off the new year, be on the lookout for falling iguanas. It's Florida, after all.
I don't touch with them.
And thank you so much, as always, to our Rockin' Friday Media Roundtable, Fred Matthews, David Bauerlein, Tim Gibbons, and John Burr. Guys, thanks for spending the whole hour with us today.
It's a pleasure.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks. Take care.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. This show rebroadcast tonight at 8. And don't forget to join us at 1 o'clock this afternoon for our new statewide program, the Florida Roundup. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend, and go Jags!
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.